You probably already know this, but the field of electronics is pretty big. There is a lot to learn, especially if you're coming in and trying to view all this stuff at once as a beginner. So this is something I think about a lot. This is something my friend Mike thinks about a lot. And this is something that Phil, who is an educational designer, has thought about a lot as well across industries outside of electronics. And so we were having all these conversations. We were just, you know, calling each other and having these conversations. And I was like, we should do a podcast about this. This is going to be a slightly different kind of podcast because it's a meta learning kind of podcast. Like, how do you teach electronics? How do you learn electronics? But I want you to know that I did try and bring the conversation back to how can you, viewer and or listener of the Contextual Electronics podcast, how can you get better at learning electronics? Because there are skills to think about when you're teaching yourself, right? We're all kind of, if we're on the internet, we're teaching ourselves electronics, you're taking the electronics course. I'm not sitting there over your shoulder as much as I want to be. I'm not sitting there over your shoulder as we're doing coursework and pointing at things. I'm more showing you what I'm doing and then you have to go and do it yourself. But everyone's kind of on their own for their learning journey. And that's why I always talk about learning journeys. It's, you know, this process you go through and you make different steps and everybody kind of comes in at different places and you have to think about where you want to get to and where you've been and what's your background and, you know, what are the resources you need to try and find. Hopefully Contextual Electronics, the course, is part of that. And hopefully this podcast is part of that journey and, you know, a resource that you use. But it's not going to be just this. It's also going to be books and it's going to be other YouTube videos and it's going to be, you know, maybe a in-person course once COVID's over, that sort of thing. So you're in charge of your own destiny in the electronics space. And how do we make it so that that's a smoother process to get from where you are today to where you want to be and all the things you want to build? And so this is the meta learning discussion about that. You know, how, so it's Mike and I are both electronics instructors and Phil is a instructor designer, I guess. I mean, he designs educational courses and he is an instructor himself. So we kind of talk about all the things that it takes to design a good course. And I personally learned a ton and hopefully we'll be implementing a lot of these changes in future Contextual Electronics. But I also tried to bring it back to people that were listening or viewing and things that they could learn while watching this. So it's a long, wide-ranging conversation. If you have any interest in education, I think you're definitely gonna love this. If you have, you know, interest in electronics, you're also going to get a lot out of this as well, just kind of hearing where we were in our journey and how we started teaching and how we can teach better. So hope you enjoy episode 9 of the Contextual Electronics podcast with Phil and Mike. Welcome to a special and maybe non-traditional Contextual Electronics podcast. Obviously, we haven't done many of these yet, but today we're going to be talking kind of a meta discussion around learning and around learning electronics specifically. So I have a course around electronics called Contextual Electronics, and today I have another fellow course runner and also then someone who's a content expert. So Mike, why don't you start by introducing yourself and your site?
Hi, I'm Mike Chaich. I'm at Programming Electronics Academy. It's programmingelectronics.com. I'm a programming and electronics hobbyist, and most of my professional career has been in the military. I was a welder for the Marine Corps. And then I was a helicopter pilot for the Army National Guard, and I've retired from that. And as I transitioned out, I really wanted to get into something that I liked, and I really enjoyed programming. I really enjoyed electronics. And so I just kind of worked into that, what I'm doing now. So that's kind of where I'm at.
I'm Phil Fitzgerald. I'm up here in Montreal, although I'm English, but I've been spending since, 95? So that's almost, 25 years educating. So my job is when people are experts or people who are experts and they want to put something together into a class, and it's either for the corporate world or individuals like you guys, then I get the call and I do all of the graphics, the design, the reverse engineering in order to turn a body of content into a class that's worth teaching.
Yeah, that's great. And so we kind of make content around electronics. We try and teach people electronics. And I think one of the things that's tough about it is there's so much to learn and there's so many like people coming in at different levels. So Phil, can you speak to like in when people are teaching just a generic class about anything, as an example, I had to teach my classmates in sixth grade how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. That was like the example was like, I had to go and teach people how to build a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And it was like this idea of like making documentation is hard, blah, 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 blah. But like, let's use that as an example here of like, if you're trying to teach someone something and they don't have any context of what it is,
how do you start to approach a problem around contextualizing, obviously I'm going to use the word context here, but you know, making this problem space approachable, and like, how do you start to break things down so that it's more approachable for people that are new to the field?
Sure. We'll go back. Actually, use your peanut butter and jelly, which is a disgusting sandwich, but nevertheless,
oh, okay. Podcast.
Seriously, that's it. Right. Over. Well, scrub that. Well, yeah. See you later.
Cultural differences. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk. What do the Brits do? It's not Marmite. That's the.
Yeah. You could have Marmite. You could have. Marmite. We have my Bovril as well. Oh no, don't go there.
Oh, Vegemite is Australia. Sorry, it's Marmite. That's Australian one. Yeah. Okay. All right.
But the analogy works perfectly across the board. And in fact, I can answer you with the analogy, which is, for the kids that you were teaching, how hungry were they when you set about showing them the sandwich? So,
I think it was, if I remember correctly, it was a long, long time ago, sixth grade.
Okay.
I think it was probably like a 9:30, 10 o'clock.
There you go.
Between lunch and breakfast.
There you go. So if they'd been super starving and you were showing them how to make a peanut and butter jelly sandwich versus they just had their three-course lunch, such as kids have with their milk and sugar in the afternoon. How different, I'm just using that as an analogy, what's the difference that I'm talking about between those two examples?
You're saying like motivation levels, you're saying. Is that kind of idea?
Okay. It's motivation. And the thing about a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, which is like it's a little bit like a PCB. It's not a bad example, right? A bad comparison, right? Is that how complex would you say it is based on the audience that you've got or that you had back in sixth grade? So was it at the right level? Was it a step way too high, or was it beyond level of basics, right?
I would say most sixth graders understand the mechanics of a peanut butter and jelly. So you're saying now people that are modern day, do they understand what a PCB is when they're approaching electronics? Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, it's kind of the idea. It's what I'm using your analogy, and it works with anything. It's about whether it's in reach and whether it's relevant, okay? And this is the thing about context. So anyone that's coming in, they need to know, and you as educators, but also us as learners, need to say, is the goal that we're chasing after, is it within reach? Is it feasible for us to be able to get to that level? Or do we need to step down a level in order to learn something before we go up to making our peanut butter and jelly sandwich? And then what I was talking to you about, whether the guys are hungry or not, is that it's got to be relevant. Because the problem is we all start, how many of us start with great motivations, right? Whether it's gym plan, learning plan, whatever it is, okay? Yeah. And then we're going to hit tough stuff further down the line. So the context is not just the start, it's the whole journey. And that's my metaphor for teaching, is that you've got to put it in reach and it's got to be relevant. And then you as educators, us as learners, have to be helped to progress through the cycle because things change, right?
Sure. And Mike, why don't you give us an idea of, for programming electronics, what are the people that usually come into the course and like, what is their normal level? And I can give the idea for contextual electronics.
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm sure this is probably the same way for contextual electronics, but we actually get quite a variety of folks who come in. I think the people that we can help best are generally electronic hobbyists who want to get into programming. So, like microcontrollers, at least from my understanding, have become a whole lot more accessible over the past couple decades. And so, especially with Arduino, we kind of like focus on the Arduino platform right now. And so, you're bringing in somebody who does have some electronics background. So the idea of like voltages and currents like that, you know, that can make somebody a whole lot more comfortable around something like Arduino because they've got that baseline of like, okay, electronics. And then it's the programming part that's a little bit more abstract, I think, for those folks. But then we also get a large contingent of folks who are completely new to electronics and to programming.
Yeah.
Now, and, you know, I wanted to point this out too, Chris. You had mentioned like you had kind of framed this in teaching electronics is like there's so much to learn. And I would say really, it just goes for so many things. There's so many different industries.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Right,
like
right.
astronomy or whatever. There's just
right.
so
Learning
much to learn.
Learning guitar is a whole field.
Yeah.
And there's obviously people from, you know, plunking on the first, you know, E string all the way up to, you know, Jimi Hendrix, right? And there's a lot of space in between.
Yeah. Yep. And so we'll get people. So it's like you think of the mountain of electronics and then you think of the mountain of programming and it's like, oh, yeah, I want to learn these, you know, at the same time. Like, yeah, this would be great.
For sure.
And, so it's it can be really intimidating, I think, for people getting into it.
Sure.
But that's also, I think, part of the excitement. You know what I mean? Because it's like, wow, there is a lot to learn.
Right.
But hey, if I can make some headway and that can be. I mean, that's what gets me pumped when I go out to learn new things. It's like you see that end result type of thing and you're thinking, and maybe how can I start this journey? And I like the journey analogy because it's like what nobody, even every expert you meet, I feel like the experts I meet are on a journey. They're willing to admit how much they don't know and how much they still have to learn, you know? And like, that's, you know, so I really like that analogy.
For sure. Well, tell me, Mike, when people come on board, how do you gauge them? So we talked, when we spoke beforehand, we talked about accreditation, certification, and celebration. So how do you first of all gauge, or if I'm coming to your site, how do I know what level I'm at? Am I a 0 or a 10 in terms of either programming or electrics knowledge?
Right.
How would I find that out for you?
Right. This is a really good question. So the way I've been trying to like conceptualize, like what is our company actually trying to provide people? What service are we actually trying to provide? And Chris, you're the one who actually, we've known each other for years and you're the one who actually kind of got this in my head years ago. But what I'm really trying to provide, I want to give people the confidence to go take on their own project. So I want people to have confidence that, okay, there's this thing I want to do. I think I know enough, or I think I understand like how I can get to that point. I might not know everything I need yet, but I've got a base where I feel like I can work to the solution. And so what I do is when people first join, I'm asking them, what is your confidence level in programming and what is your confidence level in electronics? And so it's a self-evaluation where the student is asking themselves, where do I feel, just on a scale, like what is my confidence level?
And so I think that will lead into, how much directed, I think that's kind of what we're getting at here too. Like some people are very, very confident to go and just figure things out, right? Just kind of bash their head against the wall until they run through it. And that's a learning style. And I actually just interviewed someone else who was very, very at the top of their field. And they like, look, I don't follow tutorials. I don't do anything like that. I just go and figure it out. But some people look at that kind of solution. They're like, they just freeze up. I mean, personally, I'm like that. I'm like, what do I do next? I don't know what to do, you know? And so I like a more, guided kind of thing and more of a more structured project-based thing versus more a structured, academic kind of style, like very theoretical. Some people like that, just the following the theory and saying like, I want to know everything from first principles. So there are so many ways you can approach this content or this, this learning of electronics, but it is important, like you said, Mike, to have people understand where they are and then how that might impact their resources.
Yeah.
Phil, how do you, so now you have all these people coming in, you have lots of different starting places. How do you start to break out so that someone listening here might be, hey, I need that theoretical, I want that theoretical stuff. How do you start to create a course or point people towards resources that are useful for that kind of learner, or all the different types of learners?
Yeah. You mean as a learner or as a teacher?
I think maybe both. I mean, I guess let's start with teacher, right? Because that's kind of what our frame on all this stuff is. But
for sure.
But I think ultimately the people listening are probably learners. So we need to make sure that they get something out of this.
Because it works for both. And this is the key lesson, I think. This is what I stress to my subject matter experts that I work with, but also the students that come in the class. And it's this question, which is, how will you teach what I'm about to teach you? Okay? So it's about setting the frame around the whole experience, that it's not just an input or an intake of energy and information. It's about turning that into something that is worthwhile to teach other people. And the reliance is, or the stress is on you to be able to comprehend clearly enough what you're getting in so that you can teach it back out. So let's use an analogy, and it's the common one beforehand. But have you been to London, my hometown? Either of you been there?
Okay. Briefly, yep.
Okay, so Mike, let me pick on you because you haven't been, right? But if I say to you, not yet, but you want to go with the kids and the wife, right, and so on. But if you have an image in your mind of being in London, what comes to mind?
Big Ben.
Big Ben. Everyone always picks Big Ben. It's lovely, right? Now, why didn't the image of you with three suitcases trying to get out of Heathrow Airport, get onto the
reality
tube?
Of the situation.
Yeah. So why didn't that come to mind, right? And why would it, of course? But me as a Londoner, i.e. the expert, know that you as the student, i.e. the traveler, are going to have to go through that crappy scene of trying to get your ticket organized, go the wrong direction.
Just take a cab, Mike.
Just take a cab. Yeah, and then you find out it's $180.
That's right.
Those cabs aren't cheap. So the point of that analogy is very clear: to sell people on the vision, the end point, because that's where their mind is at. And for you as educators, and I think it's the big mistake a lot of technical educators do. If I was to say to you about a PCB, okay? And you would say, okay, just tell me something about a PCB. What's the first thing that you would tell me?
There are lines on a PCB.
Okay, a mic or an Arduino?
Yeah, it's like a, you know, it's like a miniature computer.
Okay, there you go. So as I look around each of us in our rooms that we're in our different offices, where is there an example of a PCB at work?
I mean, inside the camera that I'm currently recording on and the computer that's going through, yeah.
There you go. It's on your keyboard.
Oh, yeah, I guess I'm actually sitting next to a desk full of crap. So
there we go. Yeah, we've all got our kit in there. So if I was trying to sell you on learning how to use a PCB, would I talk about lines on a board, dots, soldering, and so on, or a schematic? Or would I say, do you want to make this a custom one of these to control your light switches over there or your doorbell down there? So that's the equivalent.
I think that's actually a really good point, too, because when people take a course like mine or Mike's or any other course out there, they don't care about, they're not like, ooh, I really want to know Ohm's law. Ohm's law is the end, the means to get to the end. They're like, what you're saying, Phil. They're like, I just care about blinking LEDs or doing this thing, you know, turning a motor on my cat feeder so it automatically, they just want the end goal. And there's so many steps in between to get there. And that's usually the struggle.
Yep. And I would kick it up a notch from there, which is what we do in our classes, is that if I give you that ability, in fact, go back to you, Mike, if I can get you to London, if I can get you to that point at Big Ben with the family, okay, and there's a photo on your table 6 months after that, and it's a great shot, right, and it's the summation of the great experience you had getting there, what will that say about you, and what will that make you feel looking back on that picture, right? What would you say out there? What would that?
He'll be like, Big Ben is one of the worst tourist attractions. Actually,
I got lost.
Well, no, I mean, especially if it was a good experience, then what generally tends to come forward in that type is like you kind of rose color over all of those difficulties, and then it becomes like, yeah, you know, that
absolutely
was just a great time. Or sometimes it's getting through the difficulty is what actually makes it awesome.
That's,
you know,
yeah,
like, oh,
yeah,
can you believe that we didn't have our clothes
and
the
you
entire week?
That.
And, you know, we had to buy this and it was so crazy, but, you know, we had a great time. Anyway,
and it rained every day. Let's get it all out. Yeah, get all the stuff. But the point is with there is that you would be different for the experience, okay? You yourself, the mic, is I'm the guy who did the thing, the London thing. I did it. So the equivalent to that coming back to our education area is saying, and what we do at the start of our setup is we call it a DITLO. So that's a day in the life of, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's about describing the day to yourself of having, being the person, not just having the skill, but being the person who learned, can do, can build, can execute, and what that means differently for you. So for you guys and all the hobby or prosumers, I think that's what you call them, right, Chris? The pro guys?
So in my courses, usually people that have taken Mike's course, I'm like, hey, come on over. You want to take the Arduino knowledge you have. You want to build a custom piece of electronics now. That's time to maybe check out contextual electronics. Let's do some PCB layout. Let's do some more kind of less structured. Mike's has these really great structured, you know, point for A to B. Mine is more like, well, we want to get to B, but we don't know how the hell we're going to get there. And so let's go through and try a lot of things.
Sure.
So,
But I bet that's if we did a Venn diagram, I'm always with the Venn diagrams between your students and if you walk in any of their houses, right? They will say, they'll point at something and they'll say, I made that, I did
that, right.
I created that. And it's unique. And they know all the history of and all the mistakes they made, all the tears they wept over that piece. So it's about the transformation of people. Skill acquisition is one thing, but each of them, and as educators, and we're going back, I'm not doing a good job of educating you on the education piece,
it's about the meta.
It is going super meta, but we work backwards, or rather on each of these sites, like I say with the PCB, you don't start talking about the PCB. You got to sell the application, the feature, and the transformation.
Right.
Then you come backwards. And this is where, and we'll get to the biggest problem with experts, is this very simple point, is that the way they like to teach is the way they'd like to learn. And that isn't
very
the
specific.
Same. Very
specific. So that was actually one of my things. So like I had this origin story, but not really. It's just like why I wanted to start the course is because I started contextual electronics because I was very, very frustrated with people who were PhDs and were very, very good at theoretical knowledge. And they basically continue the tradition of that theoretical knowledge. And I struggle without having real examples, real world examples alongside that theoretical knowledge. Why am I doing this thing? Why am I building this? What is the output? And I feel like a lot of traditional education that at least I experienced was, don't worry about the end. You have to get through the process. You have to do equation one, equation two, equation three. And if you don't know these equations, you will never get to blink an LED. And it's like, man, I can just go blink an LED. I want to do that first so that I care about equation one. And then I want to take LED, that blinking LED, and turn it into a microcontroller controlling a motor so that I feel the motivation to go and learn equation two, you know, and like this whole progress. And it sounds like some of what you're talking about here is the day in the life of. I had not heard that acronym before, but I like that because it is. It's like I want to know what the end goal is, the end process, what I'm going to look like as an electronics designer, and then give me motivation to go really dig into the hard stuff because there is a lot of hard stuff in electronics.
There is. There's a lot of slog.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be. You know, if you know what you're working towards, you feel better about it. I feel like.
For sure.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Phil. I want to create a little room in the conversation for people who actually really do enjoy that theory also.
Who want to learn
Ohm's law because they actually find it fascinating.
Yeah. Sure.
I'm a little bit in that category. Like I really do just I like equation one and equation two. Not to say that I understand equation one and equation two, but actually just learning the equations to me can be exciting at times. Like, wow, this is just amazing.
Would you go and learn those without, okay, so now we're talking about electronics and Ohm's law is a very big piece of electronics, right? But would you then go and learn, do you go and seek out the gravitational equation that an astronomer might know and just go and study that equation by itself? Do you care about that? Do you care about the math enough to just isolate the math?
I guess probably not, no. Back to kind of what Phil said, there's that idea of the goal, goal out there. Sure. And then along that path, you know, as you're like kind of getting to that point, instead of like feeling like you're slogging through some of the stuff, sometimes it can be like, oh, wow, this is really
right.
Cool.
So you want to bring order to the universe that you have decided to be in, which in this case is the electronics universe. And now that you're there, it's not just fumbling around. You want to say, oh, there is a guiding principle and you like studying that principle, it sounds like.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm not against that at all. And in fact, I think that that's pretty important. It's just that if you are teaching that guiding principle without a reason to be there, that's usually my argument against it.
Right. Yeah.
The how that works, and there's space for both, right? You're perfect examples of the two, right? So the same as if you were getting on that plane to go to London or getting on a train to go downtown, there are two tracks, right? There's two wings, two tracks for a train. And the way that we work in our space, you'll hear things like Bloom's taxonomy and other different formats for teaching. I very simply break it down into these two rails. So just picture in your head the train is running on two tracks. On the left is what you need to think about. On the right is what you need to do. So you could think about the theory or the formula of Ohm's law, but at the doing side is actually putting together the PCB to make the light switch on and off, which is deploying all of those principles and concepts in place. So it's not either or, they both run on one another, but you can run on one rail briefly. You could just build a piece, you could just build an LED, make it come on, and you don't know any of the laws. But if you want to troubleshoot or figure out why your capacitors or resistors are not working correctly, then you'll need to go over to this side. So every time you as a designer or you as a learner, it's the same tracks. How do you think and how do you do in each of those? But as a designer, and we got to go back to the expertise, because unfortunately the brilliance of expertise is that you've taken all the roads that are wrong and you now know the road that is right, but you've forgotten all of the stupid left and right. And
all the bumps in the track, right?
All the bumps when you went off the road and so on.
Yeah, right.
And it's unfortunately that loss of that recollection. When I used to work with the CTOs out in Grass Valley, for example, and it's in the broadcast space. These are people who are just experts in their field, talking about cables.
Right, top of their field, right?
Top of their field. So I'd give them a flip chart marker in the hope that they would be able to convey some of that to a group, whether it was newbies or we'd be going to see a client. And they'd get up and they'd start talking. And it was fantastic, but it wasn't the right words of combination of thinking and doing for that audience in the room.
Yeah.
Because they were talking about their level, how they'd reached it, and how they'd like to teach it or be taught by themselves. Now, ignore all the stuff on learning styles. A lot of that is nonsense, okay? There is thinking and there is doing is the main track that you want to run through it. Chris.
I really like that framing because it does simplify our conversation down. And what I'd like to do is take that back to someone who's watching this now and they're like, okay, I am a learner. I know about these two tracks of thinking and doing. So then what are so if someone is in the middle of something, right? So assuming maybe they're in the middle of contextual electronics and it's not hitting that note for them. Like, is there something that they could do for themselves to start to balance between those two tracks as well, right? So is it, obviously it's my job, it's Mike's job to try and to lay down those two tracks so that, you know, thinking and doing is there, or sorry, the theory and practice, thinking and doing, right, is there. But now they're listening and they're trying to design their own way forward, right? They're trying to design, they know that like, hey, I'm a IT person, I used to do electronics, I'm getting back into electronics, I love electronics. How do they then, you know, I can't tell them what they want to be in 5 years, right? What they want to be doing, but they might know that, they might have some idea. How would they then go and design their own path towards that 5-year mark of like, I know I want to be, maybe make this device. How do they design their own personal curriculum that maybe, you know, maybe the courses that we're talking about are part of that, but maybe it's, you know, just a small part. So what would that be? How would they balance their own thinking and doing learning in that case?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. First off, we start with the vision, with the destination. Let me show you something that I'm working on here. This is for a different client, right? Can you see this?
Yep.
This is like a map, right? It's a sheet of paper. It's a tabloid piece, like 11 by 17. Okay, so we're starting off with this version hasn't got it, but the end destination, okay? Here, how to be a better deal maker. And what we're talking about here, this is a professional skill, okay? I'm teaching people how to be able to get up and teach, or how to be able to get up and teach and negotiate and do all of those pieces. Now, I don't have all the answers. This is working with a subject matter expert, but I'm obtaining the answers from that person. So the first part is to set the destination, that vision piece on there. The next bit is to take that frame of, I'm going to learn it in order to do what? What did we say earlier? I'm going to learn it in order to...
I mean, make an output or...
Right.
Yeah, so I'm going to learn it to teach it because you cannot.
That's right. Yeah, right.
Because, and this is another mantra, I'm full of the mantras, right? But you cannot show it if you don't know it. Okay. So,
and Phil has created this stuff, by the way.
I know,
and sorry, we should also mention.
I'm covered in twos. Look at this.
I was going to say, I didn't even mention Phil's site here. We should totally mention Phil's site. This is thecompellingmessage.com. This is Phil. Phil is a professional educator, right? Educator of educators. And so you can go to thecompellingmessage.com. Phil does coaching around this and he has a book. And we'll talk about more of this at the end. But I feel like I shouldn't have skipped over Phil's expertise here.
I'm doing a terrible job. But it's exactly that point, which is for someone who's sitting down and they're not sure, you have to reconnect to where the end point is for yourself. And exactly what you said, Chris, it's different for everybody, whether they're a hobbyist or they want to be a professional and do a sideways move into programming because they're reskilling. They just lost their job or now they're working from home and so on.
Everyone, how many careers people are having these days? There's all these
things
about that, right?
Exactly.
We're all working longer, having 10 different careers throughout our lives. We need to be able to teach ourselves to get towards the goal, right?
Sure.
And maybe it's just for personal fulfillment, but maybe it's towards, hey, I need a new job, or I want a new job.
Yeah, or you're part of the maker movement or the repairer movement, any one of those guys. You want to know what happens underneath when you open up a box. So first is the vision. Second is the frame of learning in order to teach. So know it in order to be able to show it. And then reversing back from that is the think and do. So the whole advice when I work with people is, if you can answer those three questions, the first bit, the vision, the second bit, in terms of are you committed to teaching it or learning it so that you can teach it, then we need to fill in the gaps in order to get to that vision and break it down into those think and those do varieties of issue that are lying ahead for people. So each one is individually, those are the outline frame. And again, we use the analogy of maps, right? Or I do. So
whether what you showed there was kind of map-like as well.
It is. It's like a tube map. Yeah. Right. So there's, think of it in terms of, so Mike, when he goes to, let's say, London, he would go to Paris as well, or go to my other city where I'm from as well, Dublin, right? So I was born in London, but raised in Dublin. Now, they're completely different layouts of city, okay? But the knowledge of knowing how maps work, how a grid system works, mm-hmm. where the key areas to go to is relevant to every city. But when you're in that city...
Is this Mike is being taught by you about how to navigate London, and now Mike's mm-hmm. going to go to Dublin and then have to teach someone else about how to get around London? Is that the thinking?
Or it's the idea in the frame in his head. He goes, I know now how to do London, and let's replace London now with X big city. So whether it's New York, Chicago, or I know that I need to orientate myself east to west, let's say, or north to south. I need to see key travel routes. I need to see what time is rush hour. I need to see all of these different bits that allow me to navigate through to the destination in London's case, Big Ben. In Dublin, it might be the Halfpenny Bridge or Customs House or so on and so forth, or the Guinness Brewery. There you go, Mike. There's an objective to reach for, okay, down at St. James's Gate. So once you have that vision piece, okay, and then you know it in order to be able to show it, which in this case means when you're in London or Dublin, you're able to walk around. And if someone was to stop you in the street and say, how do I get to so-and-so? You could answer them as if you were a native because you've understood the way the maps work. Okay.
So Mike also has to have an accent then too.
He does. He needs to do it to be sure indeed. And so it's, but that's the meta skill. So whatever city you're in is that you go to the travel area, you pick out the map, you orientate yourself, and then you work out where you are and where you need to be. So that's why I work with experts, whether they're professional or technical, because it's the same flow of trying to reverse engineer all the steps in between. And to quiz them on this thing, which is, and you guys should be able to write any of these. A is like top 10 errors, top 3 screw ups, you know, top 5 mistakes, top 10 or top 20 do not do's. Okay.
So these because are like writing listicles for yourself. Is that kind of the idea?
They are. They're like writing the worst case scenario. So remember I said Ditlow, day in the life of, we call that the happy path, right? How you get there. Then if I was to write for you, if you pick your hometown or anyone listening, 10 things not to do when you arrive in London, not to do when you come to Dublin, not to do. And so the expert can do both of those. And it's that question, answering that question, that reminds you, oh, yeah, what you don't want to do when you start with electronics is immediately start soldering, for example.
Right.
What you don't want to do is ignore the schematic and just start putting together the PCB, right?
Right.
All of these dumb errors that me, as someone who doesn't know that, would go ahead and scrap all the theory stuff, ignore Ohm's law, and just get straight in, and then wonder why my board is on fire, right? My soldering iron is super hot, and my fingers lost all its fingerprints, you know?
Yeah, let's make it a little more concrete here. So Mike in the background, he has this weird looking bird feeder thing off to his right shoulder.
Yeah,
this is actually
that's what we suspect.
We think it's that. It might be more nefarious, we'll see. But it's actually a 3D printed, Mike, what is it?
It's a 3D printed hydroponic garden.
Right. Okay. So let's use someone someone saying in 3 years, I want to be an at-home hydroponic gardener with building my own electronics control system for that and anything that comes up around it. So let's use that maybe as the goal. It's like someone's listening to this, like, I want to be this person in 3 years. Let's now go and reverse engineer that to say, what do I need to do in order to get there? And we don't have to just stick to electronics because obviously this is 3D printing. But maybe that is part of the thought process to move towards this, you know, theoretical goal.
Yep. So I would sit there, and we'll need Mike then for this, is tell me then, Mike, in terms of if we were to reverse engineer, and it literally is like working backwards. You know, in the movies, they play the scene backwards.
Memento, it's all
like in Memento,
right?
That's it. Oh, good God, yeah. So we would now, normally we do this with a whiteboard, or you do it with a Miro board or one of the pieces online. So if I was to say to you, what are the key stages? Okay. Now, what I don't want you to do is go right down into the level of detail, okay? I want you to pick a spot. So this is equivalent to me saying, when you go to London, you want to get on a jet, you want to get on the tube, you want to, but there's lots of detail underneath those where you're seated, you know, what line you're getting and so on. So how would you break back the big chunks of arriving at that hydroponic freak device over there that you've developed.
Well,
okay.
I'll do my best here because actually it's beautiful. Right, yeah. This is one of my colleagues that is working on this. So he's the one who actually designed it.
So he's the freak you're saying. Okay,
he's the freaking agent. I think really, and you know, it's fun because it's kind of fun because I've had to school myself up on this because he's been doing all the work. And so I the first thing I did when I was like, okay, you know, we want to introduce this project as part of like the training at Programming Electronics Academy. That was the idea. We wanted to have some projects that people could build. And so for me, and he was like, you know, this hydroponics thing is really neat. I think people would like it. It's practical. I'm like, cool. I didn't know anything about hydroponics. And so, I mean, the first thing I did is I'm like, just kind of started feeling out the space in general. Like, okay, I want to get to this mm-hmm. thing, but I just need to learn more about what this thing is in general, because there's apparently I thought hydroponics was the thing with the fish, you know, where you got the plants growing in the fish. That's aquaponics. I didn't know that.
right. But that's actually a good point. Like terminology knowing the glossary before is like a big one, right? I mean,
so I had to, you know, just search online and kind of like get my frame of reference. Like, okay, that is what aquaponics is. All right. Okay, so I don't need any fish. So I threw out the fish food that I'd bought, and I'm just so then I was like, okay, well, all right, I need it. So then how are we gonna build this thing? He had gotten into 3D printing and I had not yet taken that leap. And so for him it was like natural, like let's just 3D print this thing, you know what I mean? There's so many different ways to get to that, though. I mean, you can just get like
Isn't that just a beautiful expert answer? Let's just 3D print this thing, right? Because in his head, he's got a full color image of what that means, all of the 58 steps he needs to do. Yep. To me and to you, Mike, and me, Chris, let's just print it. It doesn't mean anything to me. What file am I loading?
How would I print it on my paper?
Yeah, how do I print it? What CAD file is he using? I don't know, right? So that's the curse and the blessing of the expert. It's that for him, it's one thing. For us, it's 50 things. And that's where you need to tease it apart. Because the problem is, gentlemen, for all of us, is that that area is clear to him. It's confusing to us. And once you hit confusion, game over. Right. Because if you feel like an idiot, you won't explore. And once you start getting tired and there's too much information, it's the fire hose effect.
Yeah.
You're overwhelmed.
I call my own, when that happens to me, like when usually it happens to me during troubleshooting, but I always call it like thrashing, right? And what I'll do is like, I'm in the middle of troubleshooting. I don't know what's going on. I'm getting increasingly like anxious about what could be wrong. I broke this. I did this wrong. I'm such an idiot. Like it's all this self-talk and like whatever. And I just start changing things and there's no order to it. And it's like, I just call it thrashing. Cause then what happens is when I finally do, the biggest risk about it is by the time I find the potential, the problem of what it actually was, I've changed so many other things that I could have broken three other things. And that's the thrashing effect. And so like having that calmer, like, okay, we're going to take it slow. We're going to go back to first principles, check our assumptions, check our work. Mm-hmm. Like that is much more level, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely more level. And speaking of feeling like an idiot, you know, the whole, hey, let's just 3D print it. So he had designed this entire thing in Fusion 360, which is like a CAD software.
Sure.
It's really cool looking, right? And I was messing around with the license and stuff, and I was in there, and like, he was showing me, he's like, hey, Mike, this is how you need to print this. And he just showed me, he did a screen thing, and he's like, okay. And then you download it as like an STL file, you know, that's like the file name or whatever. And then you turn that into G code, which is then something, you know, or you turn it into an STL and then this other program slices it into a G code and then you print that G code. Anyway, so I go in and he's like, okay, you got that? I'm like, yeah, I think I can do that.
Yeah. That's all clear.
I'm in Fusion 360. I can't even select a piece. I spent 45 minutes trying to click where I could have swore I saw him click. I felt like such an idiot. And I sent him back a message. I'm like, hey, man, we're going to have to just do this a little bit more together.
Let's break it down.
But
that's a beautiful example. But that's a great example of two things, right? I want to highlight to you is, first off, he gave you instructions that were clear to him and confusing to you. But second of all, you faced an issue of failing, okay? And there's no outlet for the failure. He hasn't, if he was the teacher, and it's unfair to frame it, but he hadn't given you an outlet for the failing effect. So when a student falls behind, when they get lost, because it happens constantly and it's brain biology plus it's phones, right? When these things start purring in your pocket, your attention goes off and you miss a little bit of the input if you're with the teacher. So as educators, we need to facilitate how people fail. And we do that in a couple of different ways, which is, first off, for example, when I used to teach a class, I'd give everyone a sheet of paper. Now we're going back a little bit, but you have a sheet of paper and an envelope, right?
Mike, what's paper? What's
paper? Paper, everyone. Okay, it's dangerous. You can get a cut. That's why we don't use it, right? It's so dangerous. Right.
Yeah.
So, and I'd say to them very simply, write down on this sheet of paper everything that's on your mind, right? Just get it down on paper. And I'll put it in the envelope, and it could be anything. You know, I've got to pick up the kids, the dog's sick, I've got to do whatever it is, and we put all that list and put it in the envelope, and then we just write on the front of the envelope who it is and what time you get it back, right? So it's a flush, just a flush. And I'd hold on to them, and then we'd start teaching. We were doing databases, or we were doing Excel, whatever we were doing. Then they'd get it back. The second bit was to introduce them. If I say to them, and this is a brilliant one, if I say, okay, I'm going to give you an exercise, which an average 10-year-old can do in 1 minute, okay? So it could be like build a pivot table in Excel, for example, or it could be assemble a breadboard, you know, put a breadboard together and clamp it, whatever it is. So I'm setting them up to fail, okay, so that we get the first failure out of the way early. In other words, I set them a task that they cannot possibly do, but they'll feel bad by comparison.
They're at the class to learn pivot tables.
They're at that class. And I say to them, right, 60 seconds are up. And they're all like, I didn't do it. And I go, exactly, you didn't do it because I set you an unfair test. But I want you to feel the failure so you get it out of the way first. And now everything after that isn't the
and
first.
It doesn't hurt, right?
It doesn't hurt.
There's no consequence here, right?
There's no consequence, but you felt the fail, and I've built a capacity for you to put your hands up and go, do you know what, Phil? I'm a bit confused here. Can we just cycle back? And where it does get a bit more sophisticated with the education is that reverse engineering of being able to preview where people are going to fail in order to set up the fail safes. So to say to them, Mike, you know, on your way to London, you're going to get confused once you hit the underground because there's several lines that cut across, okay? So I'm going to tell you, go to South Kensington, change there, not at Piccadilly Circus, whatever it is, okay? Because I, as the expert, are laying down the breadcrumbs, as it were, for your breadboard of this is where most people go off the rails and get lost. And when you do, that's okay. Go back to the map, open it up, and then relocate yourself on the map. Connect back to the destination. And then when we troubleshoot, it's that gap between thinking and doing. Because if you're doing a lot of the same errors, eventually you'll realize it's a conceptual problem that they've got. So if you screw up with your solder iron one time, that's just a slip of the hand. If you're constantly doing it, then there's a problem in terms of when you're doing it, the timing or the temperature or something like that. Okay. Yeah. And that's a conceptual insight that you know you need to fix. They've missed a bit over there. So you as teachers, and remember, I'm saying you two, I'm picking you and Chris, right? But I'm actually saying to everyone who's learning, if you're going to make the commitment to teach, to show what you know, okay? So you're going to learn it so that you can teach it. You can still be a hobbyist, but the frame can be around that of, I'm going to learn it so that I, as my identity, the transformation that undertakes by building this piece of kit, even if it's just a simple 3D printing, is I am now a creator. I'm a builder. I'm a fixer. I'm someone who is semi-independent. I don't have to run every time something breaks because I now know with confidence I can take it apart and perhaps resolder or reconfigure a piece of kit.
Yeah. So you mentioned going back to the map. And so that's a really, I like that framework a lot. Right. And what we were talking about is like, so someone wants to become a, you know, at home hydroponic farmer in 3 years. How do they then, so they have to create that map, and they might also modify that map, right? But how do they go about actually creating that map from themselves, right? If so, they're the teacher of themselves. They want to have these resources and whatever. How do they actually start structuring that map? So at the end, you know, so that as they're starting on their journey towards the 3-year, I want to be a hydroponic farmer at home, how do they know what the steps of that map should be?
Yeah.
Like the one you showed.
Yeah. You're asking is the truly impossible question in a sense, is that you're asking me to give, so name a city you haven't been to.
Tucson, Arizona.
There you go. And so likewise, you might pick a place you haven't been to, okay? And then I'm asking you to write a map to that place, okay? How good is your map going to be? It's going to be
as good as Google Maps as map.
Exactly, it's pretty sparse. But if you wanted to find it out, you'd go to Google Maps. The answer, I'm not being obtuse here, is that You do have maps to places that you've been to, but it's impossible to have a map to places you have not yet been to. Okay? But you do know the answer to the question of, if I was going to go, or if I had a map that did tell me what I needed to see, it would have these things answered. So the first stage is to write down the questions. And remember, they split into the think and do. So I want to know the theory of electronics or hydroponics. I want to know the top 10 things that can go wrong. I want to know what to do first in order to buy something that isn't going to be irrelevant a year from now. So you've only got a map that's got questions.
One example might be like is understanding what is inside a hydroponic system, right? So in Mike's case, it's a 3D printed enclosure. Maybe there's a pump. Maybe there's electronics controlling the pump. Maybe there's like a water filter. And so like then there's all the components of a potential system, and that could give you kind of a, that's what the destination is. So now you want to start understanding some of those individual components, and then you could dig into each one individually.
Exactly. But then you need a source of information in order to answer those questions, because you can write the questions, and then you're now in, and it's a really useful question to ask someone who's going to advise you. Can you show me what you can do? Okay. So for all of you guys, you and all of us, we've all got, so I build things in Illustrator, After Effects, and these complex pieces of software. I can show you stuff that I've built. Ergo, I know how to do it. That's a big difference between someone who says, I can tell you about it, but I can't show you anything that I've done with it. And that's that credibility gap that we face in a lot of people who think they know. They're preachers, but they're not teachers. Okay. They're just telling you what you should do, but they can't show you how to do it. So as part of the discovery, so you've got your map with questions, all these questions dotted around. Part of your discovery is to go to experts, and that's where the Mikes and the Chris's, you guys, come in. And we've got to look at you and go, hang on, are they for real? Are they for real? And that's where...
Jury's still out on this one.
Jury's still out.
Same here, man.
Exactly. And part of, I think, the smart educators is exactly what you said, I think, a little bit earlier on, Mike, or maybe it's you, Chris, putting your hands up and saying, look, we're all on our journey as well. I don't know everything. The next version, we were just talking about 3D print. The next one that's going to be even better is just around the corner. I don't know how it works yet, but I know it's coming. Yeah. And so every answer I give you is the best one I can give you now, but ask me a year from now and I may give you a different answer. So it's not that you need a badges and a master's degree and a PhD and da-da-da-da. That they're great to acquire. But in this world, particularly in our world of tech, mine is more desktop, yours is obviously literally tabletop. The principles remain the same, good design or good teaching, but the technology keeps changing and the way that your process and your workflow. I mean, if either of you, I've written a book, but I'm re-releasing it again in 2021 because things have changed, right? Sure. And I know more. And each of you, the versus, the Chris, the Mike from 2 years ago, is not the same version thinking person that you'd be now. You'd refine your process, drop certain bits that aren't relevant anymore. So part of being a teacher and a learner is building those maps and committing them. And this is, again, another area I think a lot of good experts can't do, which is if I say to you, and any one of your listeners or viewers of the podcast say, okay, just close your eyes and describe what's on your desktop, where you spend most of your time, be it on your screen desktop or your physical surroundings.
So yeah, I've got my lab right next to me, and I try not to look at it, you know?
Yep, exactly. You've got it right there. Or even your picture, not the room you're in, go downstairs in your mind and picture or in the room where you sit, where you watch TV or you have to sit and have your lunch, right? What's around you, okay? What are the pictures on the wall that you have, okay? There's a picture of your dog, your wife, your house, your car, your football team, whatever it is, okay? All of those are what we call peripherals. And the reason why I introduced that is that if I was to say to you, what's the color of your front door, you would say what?
Wood. White.
White, there you go. So you see it every day because you pass by it every day, right? And you would know all the different decorations that surround your house, which is why you notice when a picture is slightly ajar, right? Or someone's moved something when you come home. The idea is this, that by building peripherals, you can overwhelm the number one problem with all learning, which is forgetting, okay? Because even with all the motivation and all the maps, if you fold that up, that map of London, and you put that in your pocket and you don't look at it again, it's not going to be any use to you. You'll know you have it and you know it's upon your person somewhere. But when you're in London and you're trying to change from Charing Cross to get on the Northern Line, you need to know and you need to have it. So part of the role of educators is to help people remember to stop forgetting. Okay. Mm. And it means repetition. Repetition. There's a curve called the Ebbinghaus curve. It's like the loss of a signal in electronics, right? The longer the distance, the time, the duration, it drops off. One of the resistors is just new information and the fact that you forget old information. So it's on you as learners or you as teachers, I'm looking at you too, but us as learners, looking at all the other people, to build a capacity for ourselves to be reminded constantly. Now, yeah. We all write down and we do notes, but 6 months later, you're looking at a pen scrawl, maybe,
like,
or maybe.
Did I write this?
Yeah, who wrote this? What an idiot, right?
Yeah.
So it's on you people, which is why cities produce maps. There are professional people who produce maps to the cities because they want tourists to come and make it easy. And it's part of, as educators specifically, making it easy for people to be clear, not confused. And that, and now that's on the onus on the educator. I take the view that it's the educator's responsibility to teach, not the learner's responsibility to learn. Okay? So it make it as clear as possible, the same way that it's the chef's responsibility to make something edible. It's not the diner's. It's not your responsibility to go into the restaurant and say, can you fix this up and I'll prepare the onions for you. You're relying on the chef and the team to produce, you know? So it's, and remember the frame that we're talking about. To show it, you need to know it and to think of yourself as a learner who is in fact a teacher. Both of those are in play constantly along with the think and do, because the responsibility on you is to be serious about your time and your effort and your education. Yeah. Does that make sense? Am I preaching or am I teaching?
No. It sounds great. It sounds great. I want to jump back to something you said, Phil, that really stuck out to me, which was about coming to the first difficulty. Like, let's just get this out of the way when it gets hard. That's just a tough, you know, that's a tough place to put yourself at. It's a tough thing to do for a learner to frame, some type of thing they're going through in that way. I feel like in reflection, we all know when we're getting to some destination, there's going to be difficulties, but it seems to me because I'm always trying to learn something new. I just enjoy learning sometimes for the sake of learning.
Sure.
It seems like every time I start something new, I run into this difficulty and I'm like, oh, this is just hard. And it's like, every time I learn something,
why would you expect otherwise? Right?
Would that be a surprise to me that I'm having a difficulty loading this library?
I know, right? I hear music like all the time.
How can it be, right?
Yeah. It's just funny though. Like, I have to constantly remind myself that, this is going to be a challenge. I've got to just mentally prepare myself for that.
It's a corollary of the Dunning-Kruger effect, you know, where people like think that they're experts, you know, like stupider people think that they're experts with that because they don't have any knowledge of it. I feel like it's just like a corollary. It's like, well, we think everything's going to be easy until we dig into it and we know, like, oh, it's not going to be easy. But like you're saying, it's just, you got to get it out first.
Right. And also, there's this thing in that, I know I mentioned that book last time we talked, but anyway, that book, Make It Stick. I got it right here. This time great, it's cover. By Peter C. Brown and some other folks. Anyway, one thing that they talked about in there that I liked a lot was desirable difficulties. Mm-hmm. And so if learning is easy, that doesn't mean it's better. Idea.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because we've got these biological brains. We've got to actually make changes inside of our nervous system. And if that's going to happen, it's got to have some type of impact on us. Right. And the things that are easy aren't, what did you have for lunch yesterday? Like, I don't remember because, you know, it was just lunch.
Peanut butter and jelly.
You
know, but every day for me, guys. Every day. I was really hurt when Phil said that, you know.
He's 12 inside, aren't you? Yeah.
That's right.
I know. Yeah. Well, I know I've got a little grudge in. But, I don't know. So I think sometimes there are some desirable difficulties in, so there's a number of things. Like, you were talking, Phil, about, like, repetition. So it's like you can binge study, you know, a ton, feel like you have it, and then that curve sets in, that forgetting curve sets in, and it's like you almost need to let time pass, hit it again when you don't quite, you know what, it's really kind of hard to pull it out of your brain again, right?
Repetition learning, right? Like,
that's
Anky,
space.
And stuff like that.
And it's really, you know, it can be a lot more effective, it can be helpful, and I don't know, but...
No, it is.
I don't know.
The You're absolutely right. Remember we said, and we'll have to rewind, but remember I said about the identity of you as a learner, right? The transformation that you undertake. And part of that identity is the fact that when I faced difficulty, I stuck around, okay? When I wanted it to stick, I stuck around, okay? Mm. And part of that, it's difficult when you're going up the hill, but the view from above the hill looking down is always worthwhile, right? And I know that is a pithy, I'm not doing a Tony Robbins on you here, right? But there is that bit of getting through the difficulty, because 10 minutes afterwards, looking back, where will it have been? But by you as an educator and you as a learner previewing the fact that it's going to be difficult so that it's not a surprise when it happens. The individual instance is a surprise. Every time when you cut yourself, it's a new cut. But the notion of getting an injury, having it heal and being over it, that's part of the bigger package of that transformation. Those people who stumble at the first fail.
Is that like a growth mindset versus fixed mindset? Atomic Habits, I think, is the book that I read that in.
There's one of those. That's been a little bit debunked, to be fair, that piece. But it's logical insofar as the fact that if you engage in any activity, whether it's sport, piano, music, driving, I mean, how many, you have automatic cars here, right? In England, you have stick shift, which means you're going to stall a lot. The car's going to roll. You're going to have to pull in. There are lots of things that we all did when we were learning how to drive or learning how to fly, in your case, Mike, where things didn't go right. Now, to be fair, and we'll go back to you, Mike, when they were teaching you to fly helicopters, you can't just screw it up, okay? When you're up above, you're with an instructor.
You can't. You can do it once.
You can do it once. You can do it all the way down, right? But there's... But part of that
you can have that failure with you for the rest of your life.
That's it. That's it. For the rest of your life, or until it lands, whichever is.
Well, that's the rest of your life. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go, all the way down. But part of that, and certainly when you have a failure of a complex piece of machinery, is that there's checklists for you to try and figure out what's going wrong before it becomes a fatal or a red alert in that regard. So, in the same way, those individual failures that we have are. You could have a checklist, you could have a map which says, okay, when I'm failing, I know I'm going to feel like shit. So I'm going to get up and move for a bit. I'm going to and literally take a different view on what you're doing. And I don't mean that metaphorically. I mean, get up, move, look back at the desk, look back at the thing you're working on, and then look back at yourself and think, what am I thinking or doing? And where is there a gap or a question that I need answering? So one of our clients, that we built a very complex learning management system. I'm back in London. That's where the client were. I'm with the engineers down in the bowels of it's a big broadcaster in the UK. I won't say the name, but, and I said to them, okay, we've built this LMS. All you have to do is go. We built little QR codes. And we stuck it on the kit. Okay. So you scan with your phone, off you go. And we had the learning videos on the back of that. Clever idea, right? You both like that. You think it's smart.
Great.
I said to the guys, these are engineers, right? Super. I said, it works. They went, no, it doesn't. I said, what do you mean it doesn't work? No, he said the QR codes work. Everything works. He says, but it's two steps for us to do, because we have to get the phone, we have to click a QR code, we have to sign in on the back of the LMS learning management system. So it's two steps too many. I said, what do you do then when there's something wrong? He says, I go to YouTube. So we had built this complex learning management system with custom content specific to their device, okay? But they were just going to YouTube generally and looking at the chips that we were putting in there. And because some of you guys, beautiful, helpful engineers and experts, had done a quick video on when it does this, this means it's that. And that was the troubleshooting. So even though we made it as easy as possible, as soon as they hit a failure point, they were going in a different direction that we wanted them to. So being aware of that, we then changed our workflow to make it easier for them. So,
you
know it's going to come.
Then or what?
It did. Well, we got rid of the login. That was the problem. So because they just wouldn't do it. Plus, they said when they're in the bowels of the organ, you can't get a Wi-Fi signal every time, right? Or we can't get onto the web on site, but we can always get a cell phone signal out of here. And it's only, but that's the beauty of expertise rather than just academic intelligence, is that you guys in the trenches know, and certainly if you're working for a client, there's a clock on the wall. And that is when the client wants this to be done. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now you could do 50 more iterations to make it slightly 5% better. But when the clock is ticking and you have to deliver, you'll go with the version of whatever you've built at this stage that meets base specifications, right? So the realities of the trade-offs and failure. Does that speak to what you're talking about, Mike? Or does that, have I gone around it? Or rather, how you deal with or how you cope with the failure points?
No, absolutely. I love the idea of just stepping back and kind of, reflecting on what, you know, what you keep running into, you know, if you're having an error. I know, like, and I'm
some
sure,
of
you know,
just detaching too, I think. Like, I have a, I have a note for myself for like when I was, it was actually when I was getting started consulting, and I was like really stressed that I didn't know what I was doing, like in terms of like, as a consultant, I was like, I understood the theory of the device I was working on, but I didn't understand the process. And so I had this list of like, when you're stressed, go do these things, take a walk, you know, listen to this type of music, do this. And just to detach your mind from that problem and then reevaluate and refocus on it so that I'm like, oh, okay, now I can have a calmer, so I'm not thrashing, I'm gonna have this calmer mindset of approaching a problem, maybe going back to that map that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I know, like, for me, like, sleeping on problems has done an amazing thing for me. I will, like, detach, just sleep on a problem. Sometimes I feel like, especially if it's, like, some programming problem, sometimes I honestly feel like I will wake up with the solution in my head. It's freaking insane. And sometimes what's funny is I think I've woken up with the solution. I have not. I've woken up with the wrong solution. But that what that new thing has gets me to where the real solution was.
Sure.
Yeah, so that, and then, you know, another thing I find is that there's certain times of the day where I feel like I'm sharpest, and I just try to, I try to put my heavy duty technical work, you know what I mean? The stuff I know, like, I really am going to have to put my brain power, and I try to schedule that for those periods of time.
Sure.
So like meeting with you, Chris, I know this is going to be tough and painful, so I'm like, all
right, you gotta steal your reserves. You're like, oh god,
I'm picturing Mike taking Chris for an hour. Taking his hydroponic to bed, right? He's hugging that baby all the way through the night. But the part of it, what we diverted off here, but the like we're talking about with the hydroponics, or like trying to re-engineer the problem back to a solution, is it's got to be agreeable or desirably hard, what you said in the stick problem. Okay, and part of that is what we talk about, the accreditation. Okay. Now, accreditation means you've got an independent body that is viewing you, judging your competency. Okay. So with the hydroponics, if in order to be able to teach it, know it so you can show it, in order to be able to teach someone else how to do it, there would be an agreeable standard that you would have to meet of competency in both the thinking and the doing. So going back to that example, okay, we want to engineer that piece of kit. You've already spoken about the guy who did, in fact, give you the idea, or you started off working with it. Okay, think about the kind of questions now. Think of three questions. Maybe you've already semi-answered them, but three questions you would like to ask him about how the best way, the best workflow would be to build that object, that hydroponic piece. Can you think of it, three questions, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, yeah. Well, I mean, there were so many questions, and I'm trying to step back. So I guess the first one would be like, what is the software tool chain I need in order to print something? Mm-hmm. Like, that was something I didn't understand, all the steps between 3D model and getting something out. You know, so I needed to learn. I needed to learn about that tool chain. That was a big part of me. Like, what software stuff do I need to make that happen? Another piece of it was, okay, I have this 3D printer, but there's also a series of settings that needs made on a 3D printer. What are the settings you're using? Like, what settings work and why? So that would be kind of another question. And I know this is all along the whole the printing part of it, but for me, that was like, that was a big part of this, because that was the newest part to me, because I'd never done any 3D modeling or any printing or anything like that. And then another part of it was like, okay, if we're gonna write software for this thing, what are the parts? What does this thing actually need to do? And what are the parts that people would want to adjust? So for example, like, is there some standard for when and how long water is supposed to be coming down? Is there some standard for, you know, how long grow lights should be on? Is there some standard, you know, like those type of things? Like, I didn't know any of that type of like growing standard stuff. So those are three kind of, I don't know. I tried to be a little more broad about that, but yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. No, that's perfect. And there's a question this is a key question. I know I've thrown a lot of key things to you, but there's a key question, which is what comes before that. Okay. So like with the map, like with the dog, right? The I can hear out the back there, but the is what comes before that. So with each of those stages, and it's the only way you can effectively unpack your expertise, is to ask the question, what comes before that? Because if a map is to be of any use, it needs to go forward. You need to know how to get to your destination. But in order to build the map, you've got to start at the destination and work backwards. Okay? And that's my number one job when I'm with experts. So if I was to build that map for you to get to Big Ben, I would say, what comes before you're standing in Big Ben, where you've arrived at Westminster Station? What comes before that? Well, you've actually got onto the Bakerloo line. Or is it Bakerloo? Jubilee line. Okay. What comes before that? You've changed it, and so on. Now, I wouldn't have thought of that telling you forward, but it's only by being there and reversing, beep, 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 all the way backwards that you fill in the map. And if you don't have the map because it's new to you, then you have the questions. So what comes before that? I'm at Big Ben. What comes before? Or I'm at Champs-Élysées in Paris. What comes before that? Oh, I don't know. But I need to know what comes before that. Which metro stop? Which taxi? What comes before that? And you work backwards from the end destination in order to eventually arrive at a map that you can use to go forwards. And so every question for every expert and every learner is this: what comes before that? Because any gaps will be a source of confusion, delay, or error. And that's the rub of it. That's why it's so painful for some of the experts that I work with, because they're saying, well, it's obvious what comes before that. It's obvious with the 3D printing. You open the CAD file, you export, you select. It's obvious. Why would I ever need to tell anyone that?
Yeah.
And so on.
So you're saying, so if someone is, okay, so to use the hydroponic example, so if someone knows they want to have basil growing in their house in 3 years, they're giving themselves 3 years to do this sort of thing with a completely custom system. They look at a system that's out there, they maybe go listen to some experts, go and see a example of one, they get all the component pieces, and they say, the what's before that in that case is a 3D printed case. The what's before that is all of the steps Mike's been talking about with the how to learn to do that stuff. But then there's also these parallel paths of, well, there's electronics in there. What's before that? Well, you want to design something with a microcontroller, you need to know what a microcontroller is. And then before, you know, like all the way back to maybe learning soldering, maybe all these skills you need to learn. What does that actually look like so you mentioned kind of like the visual you have there, Phil.
Yeah.
Is it like people should draw these as like, should they draw their own map kind of going backwards?
They should, or post-it notes. That's the first meeting that we have. Perfect. We have an exploration meeting. And you know, it's easy now, you know, in these meetup labs, you know, the WeWork spaces, they've got the walls that you can draw on, right? So we start there. That's the modern version of the post-it note. And we say, okay, what comes before that? Now, those are questions. If we don't know the answers, we can still write the questions of what comes before that. And the questions break down into basically these four areas. Either it's a what is it? You know, when we're talking about a PCB, what are we talking about exactly? How would I put it together? That's a how sequential. Why would I use it again? Yeah. So those are the main three, but there's a fourth one, which is the what if. So what if I was to get two of them? Can I wedge two together? Can I daisy chain them? What if I accidentally break part of it? Is it completely ruined, or can I resolder it and fix it? So the what if comes out, but if you ask any of those questions in between, the what, the how, the why, you don't have to answer the why every single time, right? Once we get over the conceptual why, but the what and how are very closely linked together, because you're asking me what is a CAD file? What you're really asking is, okay, I can tell you what a CAD file is, but need to know
why is a CAD file?
why CAD? Exactly. Why not freeform it? But the real question is, okay, how? Like you were saying, Mike, you had a problem with the selection, trying to do the selection. That's not a what problem. You know what a selection is, and you know what the file was you wanted to interact with, but you couldn't find the the button to actually make the selection of the component. So as a learner, going backwards, remember, so we start with the vision in front of Big Ben, ding dong, right? Or the hydroponic, you have the picture. Think of a recipe card. And we know this because if you look at a picture of a recipe, what does it show you? All of the different pieces together, or it shows you the finished version. When you buy a car, it's all it's the finished car. It's not the wheels, the engine, the drivetrain, and you're meant to assemble.
I'd like to buy a Toyota, and they just hand you like an assembly drawing.
Yeah,
like,
there you go. There you go, buddy. Off you go. There's your schematic. Yeah. Have fun, right?
Right.
So that's not how we
you
do it.
You probably get tires down the street and
over there.
Get, you know,
that's it. That's it. And there's your map, exactly. Yeah. So we don't yet, when we teach, we end up doing the components first. and thinking that we'll come to the assembly later. Why would you need a car? I don't care. What is a car? I don't care. How do you drive a car? I don't care. All of those pieces, it's starting with the vision and then working backwards, which would be from that. How do I acquire that car? What is the reason why I would, you know, want to move into that kind of space or that car at this time? So the map is the metaphor in this. It's obviously my metaphor for learning, but like we talked about, how else would you describe, what's another way of describing a PCB? And this is a more advanced technique in learning technique. Okay, a PCB, and this, so answer this question, okay? Either of you, or an Arduino. I'm going to put, is like what? Okay, so PCB is like what?
A PCB is like a shrunk down, so I've actually seen this and used this before. It's like a shrunk down little city with roads going between elements. And electrons are little cars driving between the buildings of that city.
Wow, I like that one. Yeah. I'd heard it's like a like a lasagna or a cake or something because of the layer concept, but I prefer your.
Sure, if it's sitting by itself, yeah, definitely like
layer that's cake great. Would be good. Okay, so Mike, pick another example. What's a hydroponic like, or what is building a hydroponic like?
All right, let me think here. Let's see. Building a hydroponic system is like, oh, geez.
excuse me.
Building a water fountain.
Yeah, yep. it's kind of like building a water fountain. That's right. That's exactly right.
So there you go. Now, that technique is called analogizing. Okay, like analog versus digital, like single versus parallel. Right. All of these is thinking of things. I'm using specific electronic examples, but like we're talking about, learning is like building a map to a destination. Now, once you can describe the first thing using the language of the second thing, you know you've got to a level of, I can talk about what I know, in other words, a way that I can show it. Because the number one problem with a student in the class, right, when they'd ask me, Phil, I don't understand something, I could tell them the same thing again, but they didn't understand it the first time around, so how's that going to help? Yeah, right. As a teacher, you need more than one way to tell someone something. Okay.
So is this then, as an exercise for the listener, if they're trying to build a hydroponic system, they want a hydroponic system, and they know they need to teach it to someone else, do they need to come up with their own analogy for these sort of systems?
It's a test. Remember, we talked about accreditation making it desirably difficult, right? Mm-hmm. This is one way to formalize that accreditation. So as a teacher, I could say to you, okay, now you have 3 hours. I want you to build that device using this CAD file. Okay, boom, away we go. We can't do that in these controlled environments. Obviously, people are working on individual projects. If you had them in the classroom, you could. If you're in a makerspace or with my people, when we're in the classroom, I can say to them, there's the device, there's the software, or there's the skill. Display it for me so I can accredit that you are good enough before I give you the badge of being competent.
Because it's like a very singular task, you're saying?
It's a very singular task. Yeah, but a way to flex your mind and to show that you've got gaps is, first of all, if I say to you, what is it like, and you can't come up with an analogy, right? How
this is
well
like
do you?
Feynman method, right? This is like
exactly. Explain it to a kid.
Explain
it to a child, and then explain it to a professor. But you need to pitch your language to either level, because how is electricity like water? How is a PCB like Lego? How is hydroponic like everything you said? What metaphor did you or analogy did you come up with? I forget now already.
Chris had it. It was a hydroponics garden, like a fountain, a water fountain.
Like a fountain. There you go, like a water fountain. And then you can actually list. So if we split a sheet of paper and say hydroponics is like water fountain, and then the individual component parts, how they're like parts of a ba-ba-ba-ba. How is learning like a journey? Ba-ba-ba-ba. Everything fits into these one or more alternative versions. Because think of it, if you're trying to explain it to someone, you say it's like. And then, and going back to the visuals, if I said to you, okay, here's a sheet of paper, draw for me what it's like, then you would draw, you'd say, okay, well, this happens first, and you would immediately go to the sequential flow, which is the how-to. So in order to show that you know it, I'd say to you, okay, put it up on the page, right? Display it for me as a skill, as a competency. Mm-hmm. But like we had to do at school, a teacher will say to you, or here up in Montreal, okay, list for me how to conjugate verbs être and avoir. Okay, you need to write it down. Then you need to be able to say it. Je suis. Exactly. He's got it. And then use it in conversation and reverse it. So there's different levels of complexity, but all of them are accreditation. If you don't know it, you can't show it. And to know it, you need to know the thing
and do. Let's talk about the show it for a second. So What point should someone, so someone's creating their own learning kind of path here, right?
Yep.
Is it something where they should actually try and be a teacher at the end? Or do you mean it more of like, show it to a friend, show it to a mentor, show it, like, how do you actually quantify the show it or the teach it? Because we're talking about this, making people making themselves a teacher.
Yep.
So how should they actually then, what are the mechanics of that teaching? Should they create a video? Should they create a learning plan? What should they actually, what's the output there that
yep.
would help to accredit themselves?
Yeah, well, it can be, show me the physical output that you've created, i.e. in other words, with designers here, show me your portfolio, okay?
Okay.
Show sure. me what you've built that says you know what you can do. Then,
so for Mike, it would be like, Mike, you guys have people show their projects off and like mm-hmm. write about them in the forum.
Right. That's right. Yeah. And so I almost feel like, Chris, like if you're the learner, right? And we're all learners here. We're all learning
sure.
something, you know?
Sure.
Like sometimes you show yourself.
That's
yes.
the, yeah.
You know what
that
I mean?
Was the rubber
you,
bit, the
show,
first one.
You show yourself like, hey, I just got this web app up on a server.
Yep.
I just did that. Cool.
Yep. Yeah. I'm a very big proponent of build logs. So that's something we do on Contextual Electronics. I say, hey, look, track your progress, you know, show your good stuff, your bad stuff, whatever, but show your output at the end so that you'd have this record. Because the really great thing is when you have 2 years worth of a build log, you get to scroll back up and be like, oh, wow, I didn't know a damn thing up there.
Yeah.
And like you actually show that different. Like I have this for myself where I have journals from every day where I'm showing and like, how much I don't know about a circuit board I'm building, you know, like mm-hmm. that is, it is shocking to me how little I know at the beginning, but by the end, like you have all this knowledge about it, all the things that can go wrong. And so
sure.
if you're tracking it, like one way to show it, I think is a build log is a great way to do that.
Yeah. And it's damn tricky on your own because in a class, so we do mm-hmm. that when I was, sure. if I was out in California or Grass Valley or even up at Chicago is I take, so we take the two of you, let's say you're in the same class, same competency level. And I'd say, Mike, step out and get a coffee. And then Chris, take apart what he's done so that you can troubleshoot it when he comes back.
Well,
okay?
let me tell you all the things that Mike did wrong here.
Yeah, let me just go through all of those. Or,
guys, we got another 3 hours here.
But part of it as well is getting you to write questions to which you don't yet know the answers as well. That's another yep. part of the accreditation. Mm. So you have to be rigorous with yourself and honest. Yeah. And that's why it's the put up or shut up. And I'm full of these little pithy lines. But if... it is the competency. Can you do it or not? Yeah. Will the bulb, will the LED light up when I press the switch? Yes or no?
Right, right. Will
show
the
me
water fountain or the, you know, the
yeah,
hydroponics, will the plant wilt and die, right? Or
yeah.
will the water actually
will it
out
flourish?
Of the pump that I built, right?
Yeah. And for you as a teacher, and we are, I think I said it to you before, guys, that everyone is a teacher, but some of us are a terrible example, right? Some of us are a good, but so you're teaching all the time, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
So formalize
it. Yeah.
Especially if you have kids, you're a terrible lesson, right? You're a walking example. But the
More that you're teaching all the time. Now that you're a terrible example, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, thank you, buddy. Yeah, I'm feeling
right.
it. But the
right.
but it's exactly that, to be able to show at the moment that you can do it. When it becomes more formalized, is then when I say to you, okay, now I want you to teach me how to do what you did. In other words, I want you to show me how to get to Big Ben. Not for that nice photo you've got on your sideboard of you and the family. Okay. And you go, okay, now that's a level up because you're saying, okay, well, there's think and do. I've got to reverse engineer. Remember, get off at Westminster. Don't get off at Piccadilly. And all of these pieces. That's the step up in competency if you want to be able to teach it. That's where you reach for the map. And you're going to reach for a map because there's a sequence and a map has a sequence. And it's got a vous êtes ici, you are here, right?
Yeah.
This is where you are. This is where you want to be.
That was French. I figured that out.
You like that
I was like,
one,
what,
huh?
what is that? Oh, yeah.
Vous êtes ici. Yep. So you are here and you want to be there. So how do I bridge the difference between the two?
So let's spin it back towards, because we're getting on in time here. So let's spin it back towards the think and do. So now people mm-hmm. have, they know the end goal. They know they've been breaking their problem down backwards, 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 backwards towards building out this map and stuff like that. How does that then play back into the think and do kind of tracks that you talked about, right? So maybe they know that they need to, so like to use the let's just go with the hydroponic example again.
Mm-hmm.
They know that they need to eventually put a pump in there.
Yep.
How would they then break that down into think and do?
Yep. So first off, the question that I always ask is, what would I notice that tells me I need to do something? Okay, so let's go back to your hydroponic example. What's something that I would notice in the building of or the construction of that would tell me I need to do something else? Okay, so give me an example, Mike, or if Chris, if you've done it, what would I notice that tells me that something needs to happen next?
I mean, I guess the hydroponic, like, okay, I noticed that in all these hydroponic gardens I've been looking at, water's constantly flowing or appears to be constantly flowing. Okay. So I'm going to have to get some type of pump.
Yeah. So you're thinking,
or maybe even don't know what a pump is. You know that water needs to flow though, right?
Yeah. So I'm noticing, so I'm thinking, oh, okay, there's water flowing. I don't know any of the doing yet, because the difference between a think and a do is do, you can see the steps. You can see your hands actually interacting with the code, the keyboard, or the machine. Okay. That's a do thing. The thinking about it is on the side, and the trigger for those are what you notice. So I notice the water is flowing, but it's not flowing fast enough. Okay. So that's a thinking stage in terms of why is the water pressure dropping off after a certain time, or why is the pump whirring? I can hear it purring away so hard. Like, what is overworked?
What is noise? Why is noise? Right.
Yeah. That's it. So all those notice pieces over there, that's how you break it down, reverse engineering. What do I need to notice when? And then what do I need to do as a response? That's how the think and do works. And we go back to the reverse engineering and go back to the map. And I know I keep using it as we can go from the hydroponic back to the map and forth, is when you're in London, what do I need to notice in terms of the stop before the stop I need to get off, that is going to tell me to do, to get up, zip my coat, get my cases because we're about to get off. And we go backwards, 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 remembering that you don't always know the answer, but you do know the question, what comes before? And for each of those, what do I notice? And then what should I do?
So it's like recognizing potential triggers, right? So like what you were saying, it would be, so like the stop before might be, well, I know that this is successful when I know that water's flowing, but if I don't see water flowing, then something's wrong, right?
That's it. And that's where you, and now we're branching off into troubleshooting. Oh, I noticed the water isn't flowing. Is it the tap isn't connected? Is it the pump isn't switched on? Is it the battery or the power sources? So you've got a million troubleshooting. I remember it, and it's, I used to be out in South Africa, so I'd go around the globe teaching my software pieces, and I was troubleshooting this machine. It wouldn't work. I was pinging relentlessly, nothing happening. What was it? The cable had come out. What, but had I gone there to number one? No, not Phil. It must be the most complex, right? There's something wrong with my mapping, but the problem was down at that base level, and that's right. Where part of the checklist. So what am I noticing? What does that tell me about thinking, and what do I need to do? So
what about the implementation piece of it though? So think and do, so we were talking about kind of like okay, water needs to be flowing, but now it's like, at least they understand that, hey, I need a pump. So then what is the think and do around, like, I know I need a pump, what next?
Yep. Then it's, unfortunately, you got to go back to your sheet of paper, right? Your map, and it's going to have a lot of blank spots on there, right? A lot of blank gaps. But in terms of working backwards with the think and do, is to ask the question of that map, what's missing, okay? And that means in physical terms of now you're flipping out into research in terms of finding out what kind of pump would I need to do this much water flow at this much pressure over this much time. Okay. Then you need, and to be fair, we're lucky that, how would you have done that 30 years ago, right? You'd have had to go, library, shop, find a dude, right? Now you can do all three of those via one search on one site, actually buy the kit and so on. So it's become a lot easier, which has its own problem, because now it seems as though it should be easy. Why am I stuck, right? And now I feel like an idiot. So that's got its own problems, but I prefer that problem over the having to wait until the library's open on a Saturday.
It's better than the Dewey Decimal System.
Exactly. It is. But, and that's the rub of it with the education piece, that you're going to face those difficulties and you need to find the answers. But by asking intelligent questions, you're going to find the shortest way to get there, okay? And whether it's a map of London, Paris, Dublin, or whatever, it doesn't matter, or whether it's a map of hydroponics, electronics, or teaching you Illustrator on the or Excel on the desktop. The map is always, the map principles are always the same, to endpoint, destination, reversal, think and do, and then figuring out the why, what. Do you remember these? What was it? The what, the how.
I remember why is not important.
Yeah, why is sporadically
what
important.
If? You said what if.
And then what if. And what if, and what if is the gateway into clever things or inventions. But before you can invent, you need to know a little bit of what you're talking about, which is where the why, what, and the how come into play. Okay. Yeah. So
what's interesting about this map, you know, we were talking about making these maps, and it almost feels like it's it could branch in either direction, but like, because we're talking about like a singular focus. So, you know, being at Big Ben in London, or having a hydroponic garden that you've built from the ground up, it almost feels like it branches backwards. Like it's you have this end goal, but there's always steps to get there. And so then it kind of like branches, almost like a single elimination, like a basketball tournament or a sports tournament type of thing. And you need to like go back and see like all these different paths that you needed to take to get there.
Yep.
But you have to try and like map that backwards. And there's and then at the end, if you're all the way back to present day, you have basically a list of 40 things that you maybe need to investigate. Mm-hmm. And then you can do that sort of thing. Yep. What about then? Sometimes you said getting rid of the why. Some of the stuff that Mike and I show is kind of a fast forward, and it's like, don't ask all of the why and just follow mm-hmm. along, right? So sometimes you can find example projects instead of, so one of the things that I always run into is people who want to like dive into every single rabbit hole they see, right? So I worked yep. with someone who was like, I showed him a thing that we're going to do. Hey, there's an op amp on here. I was like, Bill, go and check this out over the weekend and come back to me with, you know, when we talk next week, let's talk about it. And he comes back the next week and he's like, hey, look, Chris, I spent about 4 hours each day reading wiki page after wiki page after wiki page. And they were so deep down the rabbit hole that they kind of like lost the map, I guess. You know, they So how do we bring it back then to sometimes people have like a guided path towards that potential goal?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's two parts I'd take out of that. First question back to you, who do you think was responsible for him going down the rabbit hole? Was it you or was it him? And it's not a blame game, it's just...
Yeah. I mean, eventually I started telling...
I blame Chris, yeah.
I did blame myself as well. Yeah, I would say, you know, the first time it happened, it was on me.
Yeah.
And then the fourth and fifth and sixth time it happened, when I asked him, you know, to try and stay focused on this one thing, that was a little less on me, I'd say. You know, like, because once you recognize it, it's like, it is a potential, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But, it wasn't on me the fifth and sixth time, you know?
No. And you as a trainer, and that's what you work out. Fortunately, I teach with people who we spend 5, 7, 8 days together. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you figure out the little quirks that people have, those that are heavy on the why and the what. They want to work out the theory of everything, but they don't want to do the how. They just want to know that they know it, which is the think part of it, but they don't want to do the do part of it. So part of it is being an educator is for you to facilitate the fact that when you feel like you're going in a rabbit hole, do this, and leaving a hook behind for him that says, why are you doing this? What is it you need to do and how to do it? But when you feel, what if you're falling into the rabbit hole, come back out of it. Now, it's not easy, because people go off and do their own things. There's never been such a level of distraction now that versus what it was in when I got my first cell phone. What was that, 25? You remember the old Motorolas and the flip phones?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, that was just a thing.
Nokia brick. Razor,
that's it, with the aerial coming Razor. Out. Yeah, Razor. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So the level of distraction wasn't there. And I don't know, across the board, the level of attention has gone down. The level of distraction.
Snake was pretty, I mean...
pretty
snake,
intense
playing
right?
snake on your phone
yeah
take you a couple take... hours
exactly whereas now you get on the and everyone nobody reads books anymore, they're all reading their phones. So you need to leave breadcrumbs around for people to claw themselves back, but you are as a trainer responsible for the transfer of learning, but you cannot control the learner when they're not in your sphere. So we've hit the limits of what you can do. What I would say, though, is if you're leaving him unclear, if he's falling into a rabbit hole either out of curiosity or because he's unclear, the curiosity is fine on his own time. But if you were the trainer who's responsible, and remember me in the room, I'm there for 3, 4, or 5 days, but I have to get, for his boss, I have to get him to a certain level of competency by Friday. So I'm a little bit harder with him than if it was just me ticking over. But it all comes back to, and this is almost to wrap it up, is asking him that question, who are you being when you do that? Okay. I'm not being metaphysical with you here, but that transformation of me as a learner, as a teacher. Okay. So I'm going through the learning in order to teach, because you can't teach whatever you find in the rabbit hole. That'll be a separate class. But who are you being when you go down that rabbit hole into that place?
So like maintaining focus on this end goal. And if you're off in, you know, 18 pages deep on wiki, you're not moving towards that end goal. You're distracted. Yeah.
Because really what he's doing, if he's doing that, all right, he's saying, I want to be curious, but really he's avoiding the desirably difficult. He's saying, I don't want to know the answer. I'll rather go and find other questions. And you as the trainer have to be a little bit tougher.
Actually, in this particular case, it was specifically that. It was an avoidance thing. And it's like, and it's a fear. And I do too, right? I mean, like, I'm like, oh, well, time to reorganize my lab. Yeah, I don't
that's
need
it. Because that's what it needs
task.
Right now.
I totally just everything from scratch.
Guys. Oh, we all do it. And we're all guilty of it, because we are all learners and we are all teachers, and each of us are discovering as we go through it. But the transformation part, and it's not about, you can take it, it can be very important, doesn't mean you have to take it seriously, right? Yeah. So this whole thing of learning, you know, life's an exploration, but at some point you'll be departing this world, whether it's the class or the life or whatever else, but you'll leave behind things that you've done, right?
Right. Phil says, okay, we're all dying. Okay.
We're all dying, yeah. And in the few minutes we have left.
One day at a time.
One day at a time, boys. That's
it. You don't know what I've seen.
Yeah. Attack ships on fire. Yep.
One thing I was trying to point out too is that having something like Mike's course and maybe contextual electronics is like, mm-hmm. like having a guided path might keep you on that course, right? And
yep.
so like Mike, yep. you have like these, you know, I think very digestible in between things that people can like learn Arduino, learn kind of code along with electronics and kind of keep them focused on a path.
Yeah. So I'm getting blinded there. Go on.
So Mike, what are some of the things that like might help to keep someone on the path based on that kind of instruction?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think there are, yeah. So I think there's learning preferences, you know, people have different preferences on how they learn. Like I love to go through a guided path when I'm learning something new. So if I'm going to take on something new, the first thing I'm going to do is like, I'm going to buy a book and I'm going to like skim that book. I'm going to invest. Like for me, I see it as an investment. Like I am going to invest in myself. So I'm going to pay somebody who's gone through this path already. I'm going to buy their book. And I'm going to read through it. Right now I'm reading Kent Beck's book on, implementation patterns. It is just, it's like one of those gem of a books. Like it's so good. And I feel that, you know, this guy's been developing software for decades. And I'm just, you know, I'm going through and I'm like kind of following his thought process. You know what I mean? And so, but that's the path I'm generally go. Some people, I've noticed, especially with like, I guess some people maybe might not prefer that. And they feel as though they're going to get to their end goal quicker if they just, well, I've got this problem. Let me go find this answer. Okay, I found that answer. So for example, okay, I need to do this. Let me go to YouTube, figure out how to do this, right? And maybe they figure out how to do this after, you know, however many hours or whatever, searching YouTube, Google, whatever. And then they realize, okay, but now I need to do that. And then, okay, and then let me go to YouTube. And, you know, and it's like that also takes time and energy to put into that focus. You know what I mean? And so the question becomes like, well, at what point, you know, like at what point is which quicker? At what point is which better? At what point does, which process provide you, the learner, with more flexibility down the road? Because now I actually have some of these cracks filled in. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Right. No, like what if you can't find the specific thing you need? This has happened to me before because I'm kind of in that style. And I'm like, oh, I just need the answer. I'll just go find the answer. And then I find the answer and that works great until there's no one on YouTube that has put, you know, done that exact thing that I need.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well, I don't have the base knowledge to.
For sure. And even the wrapping, forget the learning styles. There are preferences, absolutely. Some people like to get stuck in, right? There are people who like to dig the garden and people who want to study the Latin names of plants, right? I get it, right? There's a difference.
Yeah.
But for either frame or either approach, sorry, there's the same frame you can put around this. How would I approach this if I was going to teach it? Okay.
Yeah,
so whether you're reading your book, Mike, or whether you're actually getting stuck in, to step back before you dive in, like if I was going to London in order to teach or to show someone else how to have as good an experience that I've just had. Okay. Mm-hmm. So how would I approach it in terms of my note taking, my memorization, my map completion? And it doesn't mean you have to, I use map in the widest possible sense. It could just be a stack of post-it notes stuck on the wall, or it could be a detailed workbook, a checklist, an instructional design. It could be a cheat sheet. Look at the IKEA things that you buy, right? Those pieces, and they've got
the 10-page booklet. That's actually like using the little Allen key and stuff.
That's it in there. Yeah. But it shows you from a 3D point of view, so you can actually see what's happening underneath. You know, the schematic is open, so you can actually look under. So how would you, with whatever you're doing, whether you're doing or thinking, okay, how would you, and here's the frame to put around it, how would I learn this in order to teach it rather than glance at it, slide across it, and maybe have a lucky installation or effect from it? But if I was to teach the person that's behind me how to do this, and those are the advanced level pieces that brings a level of discipline, but beware, it increases your energy burn while trying to learn it.
Sure.
So it's not, it's a trade-off on those, okay?
Right. You just need to get to the end goal, you might just drive towards it. If you have a deadline or whatever, you might
Yeah, and focused. It's going to be exact because you're thinking about it as a man who's going to make a map, man or woman who's going to make a map by using the joke. But if you're going to feel that in and you care enough to leave something for someone else to follow or to not forget it for yourself, you're leaving it for the future
How long term?
How do I do that again?
Yeah, either one off or whatever.
Yeah, and Phil, you know, like what I'm hearing you say, it's kind of like, and you've said it, you know, several times, but it's starting to set in. It's almost like you're holding yourself as a learner to a higher standard. Like you're
absolutely,
you're like, I am not just learning this. I am going to put myself through a transformation. I know it's going to be difficult. I know it's going to be hard, but I am going to do those things. I know I will want to avoid, but I'm going to do them anyway, because I know in the end, that's actually going to result in what, you know, in what I actually want.
Yeah. And you're going to take pride in the pain that you went through to get there. That's the point. That's why we look at photos of where we've been or if we jumped out of a plane. It's that not everyone can do this. I did it, right? And so we talked about accreditation, which is when people come in. So when they come into one of my classrooms, I say, do you know this, 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 and that? And they say yes or no. If no, then. If no, go and learn that before you come in here. Learn about electricity before we do a circuit board, right? There's natural routings. Okay. So that's the accreditation part. The certification part is that after you've posted the accreditation, you've show me your work. Let me see the LED light up when you hit the switch or the hydroponic actually flourish some basil, not basil, basil. Okay. There to go into our sandwich. Okay. Then I can certify you, but there's a third piece of it, which is the outright celebration of the fact that you've now transformed yourself of your own efforts, along with the collaboration of all that internet, all those books, all of those other pieces of the puzzle that you've assembled. But the celebration, which is why on the day, I mean, we run classes up to 7 weeks, but at the end of it, there's a celebration, which is normally either your badge, your passing out, your applause from your peers, but a recognition.
Even posting your project online, right? That kind of
exactly, posting your project online and saying, I felt enough pride to go through the pain. I did my thinking and doing. Here's the destination. It doesn't look exact. So the picture you'll have of Big Ben will be slightly different from the picture of, you know, your particular project will be slightly different. But you went through it and it wasn't for everyone. You've done something that was just a little bit special for you. Perhaps no one else gives a crap about it. But you know that you set yourself about a task. You did it, and you did it in a way that leaves breadcrumbs behind for you to teach yourself again once you've forgotten or to teach others. Yeah. But that's the badge. That's the marker. That's the thing. And for you as learner or for you as educator, all of us both here, to make it appreciably hard to get into, because if you're not turning away, and I turn away lots of people for classes who think they know what they're doing, and to say to them, if you don't know this well enough, you'll be wasting my time and yours. And that's, so just go and figure out something else and come back to me when you're ready. I don't want to teach people basic Excel, basic databases, basic Illustrator. That's not for me. Doesn't mean they're wrong. It's just it's not right for me
right,
in there
just, yeah,
at this
that's
time.
It right now. Yep.
And they've got to measure up in order to come into the class, which immediately you think, why would I turn people away from the, you know, coming on the class? Actually, you're turning more of the wrong people away so that more of the right people can come through that you as a teacher
to make
can
it
give
a, a better experience. And
a
like
better
that.
Experience. And if we're all like that, we'd all get less drop off and we'd all drop off less things in our life if we were appreciably harder on ourselves before we went into that. Because I've got a wish list of 101 things I'd like to do. So have you and so have you, right? Mm-hmm. But really, there's probably a top 5 or 10 that we're going to do. So let's be harsh and let's just chop away the other 90 and put those 10 to work rather than the wish list of 90 odd and feel crappy because number 93 hasn't had any action on it. You know, we haven't done anything with it in there.
Yep. So this is probably a good place to be kind of wrapping things up. Let's take a look at Phil's site here. So once more, philsthecompellingmessage.com, and you can go and talk to Phil there and read his book, find his book, buy his book, see all his past clients, things like that. Also, Mike's site here is programmingelectronics.com. You could sign up and take your Arduino skills to the next level. And there's a lot of different projects, things like that. And of course, if you don't know, you're watching the Contextual Electronics podcast, and this is the past episode here, but you know, there's courses around how to build individual projects and learn skills and things like that. So thank you to both of you for being here. And
thank you, Chris. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, excited to continue talking about, you know, this is a tough field, a tough topic, meta topic around learning, but I think it's really useful for people to understand it and how, you know, content is constructed so that they can also then, if they don't find what they need specifically through our sites, they can go and construct their own and start building their own journey like that.
For sure. And I'll provide you with some breadcrumbs, actually. I'm building these maps. I'll build some template pieces specifically for either of you, okay?
Sure.
That you can give to your learners and start doing it. Because the one thing about certainly you two and the people that you work with, I've never seen such a good, vibrant approach at the Maker Lab that I go to of people who will take time to sit down and share. It's unrivaled in any other sphere that I've worked in. It's fantastic. So credit to both of you for engineering that, and along with the people that you work with.
All right, great. Well, all thanks, right, guys, and we'll talk to you soon.
Cool. Thank you all. Bye now.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
So that was episode 9 of the Contextual Electronics podcast with Phil and Mike. And like I said, that was a long discussion around education and electronics and how people can improve their own learning journey. Hopefully you got something out of it. A bit selfishly, I know I did. And when I talked with these guys, you know, I'm always trying to improve myself as an instructor. And as you heard there, everyone needs to be thinking like an instructor or instructing yourselves, because you never know something as well as when you can teach it. And so that's another reason to think about why instruction and instruction design is important. If you have any interest in the Contextual Electronics course itself, if you don't know, there is a 1-week free trial for anyone who wants it. You just have to be a new student. So you can sign up. There's no risk to you. You can cancel whenever you want. I always want to throw that out there. If not, that's okay too. And we are going to keep trying to improve the Contextual Electronics course over time. In the meantime, we will have more videos here, more podcasts, more things for you to do. You can always go and interact over on the Contextual Electronics forum for free. That's an open forum to anyone who wants to just ask your questions. If you're somewhere in your learning journey, please go over there and ask some questions. There's a lot of people that are willing to help and willing to help you move along your electronics learning journey. In the meantime, if you have nothing else to do, we love iTunes reviews, and we love just reviews anywhere, or if you could tell other people about it, we always appreciate that. So that's all for now from the Contextual Electronics podcast. We'll see you in the next one. Thanks for watching.